What can they do today to future-proof their personal income those 5 years out? What would you do? I know what you're doing, but what would you do if you were them?
I have the best answer. I think it's the ultimate answer that trumps a lot of answers, is to focus on the business generation more than anything else.
It's time to reclaim control, not just of your law firm, but of your life. Welcome to the Law Entrepreneur Podcast. Discover how early adopters are leveraging cutting-edge legal tech and early adoption strategies to lead the industry while embracing work-life balance. Unlock the secrets to a thriving law practice and a balanced, happy life with the Law Entrepreneur Podcast.
Welcome to Grow Law Podcast. I have a repeat guest, an amazing guy, Sam Mallet. I can't even say that from which law firm or from which brand you are, because you have started and successfully run so many different legal companies. I think the tally is now 6, and the 7th one is in the making. Your numbers are astonishing. I think you've been at it for about 10 years. Most people can barely like keep up with their one law firm, but here you are, still a young guy, under 40, 3 kids, incredibly successful. 6 law firms and another company that's adjacent to these law firms that you have started, and successful company and so on. How do you have time to do this?
A lot of systems, a lot of understanding myself, leaning into my strengths, and then surrounding myself with my complementary people that could fill in the rest. But I think a lot of it comes down to just being strategic and smart about my time. I don't work 40 hours a week. I think I probably average right now between 25 hours, 30 hours a week at most, if that. But I also spend a lot of time on weekends to work and to think as much as possible. And I also use a lot of AI and ChatGPT to figure out exactly what to do and how to do it strategically. And also, at the same time, the other nuance is I'm not the day-to-day operator. I'm not running these law firms myself. I'm not involved with the day-to-day. So I don't deal with clients. I don't deal with prospects. I don't deal with the issues that come up on a daily basis. I deal mostly with the COOs and the directors that are operating these law firms. And those are my day-to-day interactions, is kind of behind the scenes, marketing, automations, and working with the directors to help them grow their firms.
Yeah, it's interesting. I often in conversations when people say like more money equals freedom, I correct them. I'm like it doesn't have to equal freedom. Your proper org chart equals freedom. Not having more money does not. I've seen lawyers who make millions of dollars and they have no time to enjoy a single one of those dollars. Incredibly busy. You've built it right.
Yeah, and it's not about generating more money. It's I would say foremost control. Mine is control, which is like control/time. And then second is profit, which I've been exposed to so many different law firm owners where they're making a lot, but they're not keeping much. So that's a lot of times comes down to understanding your numbers. And I know these are the things that you always talk about, Sasha, you know, understanding your numbers and knowing where you are and your P&Ls and all that stuff. Yeah, that's where it's at. But ultimately control of your life. And also realizing that it's just a business. Ultimately, the business isn't your entire life. Your business is supposed to just help you and enable you to have a better life, be a better family person, do good in your community, you know, do things that you enjoy doing. So it's just an enabler of everything else in your life.
I love the way that you look at it. And also you sound so humble, but to add to the numbers that you've already shared. So you work 25 to 30 hours a week. I love that you said that you spend a lot of your time on thinking, because I find that thinking for an executive of any type of business is the most valuable and earned right. Like you have to have that org chart to earn the right to do the thinking for work. Most people haven't earned that right. That's why they're busy practicing law or operating a business, because they haven't earned the right to think most of the time. It's hard to earn that right because you have to know how to build that org chart. But here's what I find fascinating. So 25 to 30 hours a week, yet across 6 of your brands, people, not you, but people, sign up between 1,000 and 1,200 cases per month. This is nearly unheard of under leadership of one person. Within 10 years, actually probably less than 10 years, since you really started building your law firms, as in plural, How did you scale up so quickly? And if you were speaking to hundreds of law firm owners who may be in awe of these numbers right now, which I bet overwhelming majority of our listeners or viewers or readers are thinking this is impossible, and I want to know how this guy did it. So what's the most practical advice you can give?
So actually, it's over 10 years in the making now, which even sounds crazy for me. Like, it's been 10 years already. It flies by really fast. 10 years in the making. I started off in the first couple of years, I literally had less than $2,000 to my name for like 2 to 3 years. Essentially, started from the ground up. No outside funding, no money from my parents. And literally had to grind. Learned to tell myself how to do SEO and how to create a website. So my first kind of clients came from SEO. Then once that started rolling, I started getting into learning about Google Ads and started spending that money that I was making from SEO, rolled into Google Ads, started making money from that, scaled that up, and then got into the world of sales funnels, which really kind of put some fire to it. Then I got into the world of YouTube. Did that for some couple of years. Then I got into the world of Facebook ads, and I've been kind of in a Facebook ads world for the last 5 years. Then about 4 years ago, I got into TikTok ads, then YouTube ads. And it's just been the same principle, which is know, understand what these platforms, how it works, what it takes to run successful ads. Track everything to the dollar to know exactly where my leads, qualified leads and clients are coming from, exactly from what source, what campaigns, what ad sets and what ads, and be able to track it and be able to consistently every single week know where my clients are coming from so I could spend more in those places. And I have a very kind of trackable, dependable way to know exactly what's my cost per acquisition and be able to increase my budgets where it's profitable. And that recipe, this kind of framework, has been able to help me get to spending $1 million a month on ads. Now I've kind of downsized to about I'm going to say $600,000 a month. But it's just, the framework is the same as I did from day one, which is, you know where my clients are coming from, know my numbers, and be able to spend money in the profitable places.
So very interesting. I think everyone's minds are like heads are spinning as they listen to this. So you go from SEO to Google Ads after you started making money from SEO. Then you go into YouTube. Then you learn about sales funnels. Does all of those, I don't know what you call those discs from sales funnels, but they are discs from sales funnels. Yeah, your awards. Thank you from sales funnels.
And if two more on the ground too, but I feel like when I move into the next place, I feel like these are going to be the thing of the past. I'm just going to move on. So I think that was a nice little period of my life where I could be proud of these, but I could eventually move on.
It appears that that investment has paid off handsomely. And as you learned sales funnels, you have moved on to social media advertising. And if I understood you correctly, all of your advertising today is tied to a few social media platforms, correct?
Correct. At this point, 99% meta ads, which is basically Facebook and Instagram ads. And just a year and a half ago, I was running ads on four different platforms, which is meta ads, TikTok ads, YouTube ads, and Google ads. And over time, I realized, depends on what practice types. But for the most part, I've seen that there's a thing called the red ocean, which is where everybody is competing with each other. Usually the costs are just inevitably go up, where it gets to a point where even I would say the good chunk of those people that are running those ads, they're just not tracking their numbers and they're actually losing money running those ads. Like a good chunk, I'm going to say one third of people that I think that are running, let's just say Google ads, are actually losing money. They just don't realize it. So over time, because I have such clarity about where's my highest ROI, and I applied the framework of spend more money where more money can be made, I've been essentially focused on meta ads the most. It's more of a blue ocean. It's a lot more scalable. Either the market is bigger, and it's a little bit more creative friendly, where, you know, if you're a creative person, that could be a something that could work to your strengths. And it's just been more fun. Kind of Google is kind of like, feels like limited, capped, saturated, versus Meta, it's kind of scalable, fun, and just something that you could kind of scale across different practice types.
I would argue that Meta is also incredibly saturated with ads, period. So when you're scrolling through Facebook or Instagram.
I don't know about that. I think it's saturated amongst the average media buyers.
Correct.
The people that are either think they know what they're doing, or they're doing a typical way, or they're hiring typical vendors. But the very successful people have no, there's no end to, you know, how much they could scale with Facebook ads. A lot of times the limitation, Sasha, let me tell you, is the law firms, whether they can even handle this many number of clients that Meta ads could generate. The Meta ads, in my experience, has never been capped by Meta ads. It's always been the law firm. This is law firm systems that can handle as much as Meta can provide.
But also geographic limitations.
Yes.
Competition, because practice dependent, right? For different practice areas, this would work very differently. But this also applies to Google. There's always a limit to what you can squeeze out of any market. It's natural. If there are 1,000 cases in your market in any given month, you're not going to get 1,001 cases, even if you own the whole thing.
For sure. And let me just give like one secret little way. You know, Meta ads does not work for just targeting your city. Mm-hmm. They're just way too, you know, way too small, limited. Small. So minimum has to be state-based, and ideally state-based, kind of like default, if not multi-state, and if not national.
Yeah. We're not going to reveal all of your secrets, but like this works incredibly well when you can hit a region. Region or greater geographical market. So it doesn't work for every practice area, for every law firm, but for some. And success leaves a lot of clues. So if you're really curious-minded, you could start digging and see how people can be very successful on the social media platforms. And speaking of success, what do you average, if you don't mind sharing, your average case acquisition cost? Like on social, on Meta specifically, what does it cost on average across all of your practice years, across six law firms, what's the average case acquisition cost as a percentage?
The factors are one practice type, and as you said, one market. Mm-hmm. But from what I'm seeing, across doing this across, you know, 20, 30, 30 different practice types, different campaigns, all that stuff, minimum is going to cost $300. That's like best case scenario.
What's the percentage of the case value?
What do you mean by percentage of case?
So let's say that if your average case value is like $5,000 to the firm, what percentage of that $5,000 would you invest to get it?
If it's a $5,000 case for me, let's just say I'm willing to spend up to $1,500, one third.
One third.
That's my cap, but sometimes even more than that. And then that's just the marketing cost. And you also obviously have the operation cost. Mm-hmm. Obviously, then you need to be very clear on what's your cost, the marketing cost per acquisition, and your what we call essentially it's operating cost per sign up. So let's just say we sign up 10 clients a month, and it costs $1,000 to generate those. It costs $1,000 to generate each of those 10 clients. So let's just say it's $1,000 cost acquisition. Well, there's also a cost to operate and serve those clients. So let's just say that's another $500. So that's a total cost of $1,500 per total sign up. And then on the back end, if you're making $3,000 or more, well, you still get profitable for $1,500. So those are the things that you kind of have to look at. But yeah, the kind of rule of thumb is like one third, up to one third in marketing is usually okay. And then probably another one third or so, maybe in an operation, then the rest hopefully is profit.
And when you say operation, you're actually speaking about the direct cost of service. Like this is what it cost you to deliver the service that was promised through marketing, delivered through, promised by intake, and that's delivered by the actual people who do the job.
Pretty much it's the, yeah, all other expenses, including your salary and everybody's salary and the office and everything else.
Yeah. So this is a huge part of your success. You are able to invest up to 30% or 33% on acquiring those cases because your cost of service is so low.
Up to. That up doesn't to, mean that's really you want to pay.
You don't want to, yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes we got an ROI as high as 800%, 900%, which is mm-hmm. like unicorns. At that point, you're like, you're printing money. You want to spend as much money as you possibly can. And we've been at those stages where we went balls out, you know, spending close to $1 million a month in ads and want to take advantage of the opportunity as much as possible, because that usually lasts a couple of months, maybe a little bit more, and then things level off. And then now you got to, you know, figure out what to do next.
I got to give you a couple of examples that will kind of not invalidate what you say, but will go against what you said as far as unicorns go. So we have numerous clients who routinely make 8 to 10x on their marketing investment. And here's how it usually works. So if you are in a very competitive market, but your practice area is not very competitive, for example, you can be in New York City, that's smack in the middle of Manhattan, which is incredibly competitive for law firms, but your practice area is uncommon, but there is substantial demand and your case value is high. For example, high-end medical malpractice. You're not going to have many law firms that specialize in that. Your average case value will be well into seven figures, and your return on marketing investment will be more than 10x. Or alternative to that, if you practice family law in a smaller market, not New York City, but Spokane, Washington, for example, there aren't that many competitors yet. Plenty of divorces still happen. And you're going to have return on marketing investment of also over 10x. But for everything else, we always talk to our clients, like the target is 15%. 20% is acceptable. 25% is your max. And here's why. Most of our clients are not optimized as your brands, as your law firms. You have really perfected the offshoring model where most of your labor is offshore. Thus, you can deliver that service for a third of revenue. Whereas most law firms are fortunate when they're looking at their P&L, profit and loss statement, and they're like, we're spending 50% on our labor. So if you're spending 35% or 33% acquiring those cases and you spend 50% on your labor, you're working for the sake of working. There's no profit left.
Correct. It's essentially a nonprofit organization.
It's a nonprofit organization.
It's a public service company, which is like, you know, we're doing good for the community, but, you know.
I love it.
And that happens
all the time.
We'll be surprised how many law firms are essentially a public service company where, you know, fortunately the lawyer is the last person who makes money from this venture, and they're the ones that are working the hardest, and it doesn't need to be the case.
I do have an admission to make. So I'm laughing about this, but my partner and I routinely check our cost of service, and we cannot lower it beyond 47%. So we're nearly at that 50%. And we have two production offices that are based in Eastern Europe, but delivering high quality service in the marketing business for lawyers is a very expensive game to be in. For sure. You have to have very smart people onshore or offshore, and you have to pay them well to keep them. And it requires a lot of labor to deliver substantial results.
For sure. Especially as you're saying, especially if you're trying to deliver actual results. Unfortunately, the market that we're in, Sasha, is most of the companies are just churn and burn. They're just trying to make money, short-term money, you know, not focusing enough time on building up a good team and driving actual results. You know, maybe they'll bring, you know, some of these vendors and companies will bring your client, you know, generate your results for the first couple of months or two, and then they'll, you know, they'll move on to the next client. It's very rare to find that good long-term law firm marketing company who is willing to, you know, play the long-term game, build a good team, and do it successfully.
That's true. We haven't counted how many marketing companies have gone out of business in the last 5 years, but it's a substantial number. And we foresee that with the prominence of AI in a lot of sectors of marketing today, there will be a hell of a lot more marketing companies exiting the business in the next 5 years rather than entering the business, which I'm curious, as you are a very future forward-thinking guy, where do you see legal market, the whole thing, heading into the next 5 years? Not a year, but in 5 years.
I think the ultimate future is a kind of an autonomous law firm where you essentially have one operator who is running a very big practice with a very minimal staff. And the interactions that are done, that are with the prospects and clients are all AI. So that means AI is the one that's texting and calling up your prospects. AI is the one signing them up. AI is the one collecting the documents. AI is the one who's going to get all the information and the documents and start the drafting. The last level, maybe with the lawyer will review, do the due diligence to make sure everything is good. File it. AI is going to take over to be able to deal with the opposing counsels or to settle it. And then AI is going to be able to distribute, you know, the whatever that goes into OILTA and distribute the rest into, to the client. And then AI is going to ask for the Google review. So a lot of that, I would say like 89% of the operation is just going to be AI who's going to do this via text and via email and via phone calls. And then just a very, very, very small team of kind of managers that are overseeing this process. And obviously with a good insight about all the numbers. So what I just explained, this is literally what we're currently working on and building. We're taking it step by step. The first part that we've been able to solve is using AI to be able to sign up clients, which I could break that down into essentially three parts. First is increasing responsiveness, getting in contact with prospects. That's like one of the biggest issues with leads. Second is once you get in contact, then qualifying, essentially asking a set of questions to make sure that they qualify. And then third, either get them signed up or at the very least use AI. The AI will book these qualified prospects into the calendar of our best integrators for the integrator to go to sign them up over Zoom or over the phone. So that's the first part. The second part is having AI to collect documents. Collecting documents we found to be the universal problem with all of our law firms. We could sign up the clients pretty well, just a numbers game. As long as we generate 100 clients, we'll have a conversion rate. X number of those prospects will sign up. Now that we sign up 10 clients, what's the survival rate of getting these 10 clients to the finish line? Which is, hey, you know, Bob, now that we signed you up, we need you to go get us these documents. We found out that for some reason, people are lazy. People are lazy or they don't have the time or they don't whatever, or people take short-term kind of make short-term decisions, even though this case could be worth $10,000 to them, they'll go save money for $10 just is trying to, you know, provide documents that could, you know, make them $10,000. So we found that it's also another big hurdle we got to get through, which is helping these clients get their documents in order, provide also information we need. If there's information and stuff that needs to be collected throughout the middle of the case, they'll be able to follow our instructions to be able to get them to the finish line. And that what we call is a survival rate. And right now we track that number across all of our law firms. And we're always looking to obviously increase it. So that's another big part that I think AI is going to really help a lot. And it's something that literally right now we're dealing with tomorrow. Like we just texted all our directors. Hey, everybody, I mean, we've been pushing everybody to focus on the survival rate, but tomorrow we're going to be doing our big presentation. We've been talking about it for some time, but tomorrow is like, okay, let's get to like, what's the five changes we're going to make to increase the survival rate. And then I have a feeling AI is going to be part of that conversation. So, but yeah, ultimately fully autonomous law firm, everything, you know, just like lay out the steps, but there's more steps to this, but AI is going to be able to step in across all those different departments and help out in those divisions.
So to summarize what you just said, there will be a dramatic reduction in lawyers and support staff.
In support staff, for sure. And instead of needing three or four lawyers, you're probably going to need one or two lawyers. So less lawyers. And I mean, lawyers are completely gone, but you know, the good ones are going to be okay. The ones who are kind of doing repetitive tasks that it's a lot of text heavy. That's definitely ripe for disruption for sure.
So if we were to guess here, early Q4 of 2025, by the end of 2030, we may see 60% reduction, 70% reduction in this field easily.
I think it's very hard to predict that far out. I think there's been the pace of change is increasing, ever increasing every single week. where the, you know, the change used to be on a year-to-year basis. Now it seems like it's weeks to weeks to months to months. Then eventually it'll be on a day-to-day progress. Then eventually it'll be hour by hour, then minute to minute. So I can't even guess what will happen in the next 12 months, let alone in the next 4 or 5 years. So I try not to, you know, you can make some assumptions, you would assume. But yeah, over time, yeah, I would say definitely consolidation of the staff for sure. I mean, I already felt it. I'm running these law firms. One of our main things that we do is we hire intakers, we hire document collectors, we hire demand writers, we hire lawyers, we hire marketers, we hire people that contractors to do a lot of the marketing stuff like that. And over time, we consolidated. I think we're like our team is 50% less than last year, just from this consolidation. You know, I used to work with a lot of contractors to do copywriting and graphic design and video and this and that, even, you know, drafting our demands. Like, it doesn't require 5 people anymore. It just requires 1 demand writer with an AI tool that's overseas using an AI tool who's able to churn out 200 demands per month. Yeah. 200 demands. If I would have said 3 years ago, it would have came to me, 1 demand writer could do 200 demands. I'd be like, how? What do you mean? They don't have that much time. Like, yeah, because AI, they're able to use AI to be able to write those demands.
Yeah, I think so. I have technology leaders from the industry on this podcast quite regularly. And based on everything that I've heard and seen from them thus far, it is not a wild assumption that there will be a reduction in this industry of 60, 70, maybe even 80% in 5 years. So put yourself into shoes of a typical law firm owner who may be operating like a 5-lawyer law firm, 4-lawyer law firm. They're in one of the B2C practice area, be it personal injury, criminal defense, or estate planning, immigration, whatever else it may be. And right now there is anxiety. Like, they may be hearing this in November of 2025 or maybe November of 2026. And there is a great deal of anxiety about how am I going to feed my family in those 4 or 5 years? What can they do today to future-proof their personal income those 5 years out? What would you do? I know what you're doing, but what would you do if you were them?
I have the best answer. I think it's the ultimate answer that trumps a lot of answers, is to focus on the business generation more than anything else.
New case generation.
Yeah, case generation, client generation. Yeah. I call it business generation.
Mm-hmm.
That's the best way to future-proof yourself. Because if you're just going to be running a traditional practice, you know, do your own thing, you know, whatever referrals I get, whatever that I get from Google, whatever calls I get, I'll deal with that. Over time, these people who are focused on the business are going to eat up the market. You know, the smarter marketing, they're going to be at more places, they're going to spend more money, and eventually your calls and referrals are going to be cut down from these actions that the market is taking. But instead, most firms rely on referrals and long hours. My Legal Academy helps lawyers build a predictable pipeline, fix intake, and close more clients. That's how attorneys grow their firms and get their most valuable resources back, time. Book a call with us to start your growth journey at schedule.mylegalacademy.com. Again, that's schedule.mylegalacademy.com. If you're willing, not everybody, you know, not everybody's capable. If so, then that's why you need a good operator or good vendors and good marketing companies to be able to work with to focus on this client generation. But if you go focus on the faucet, can I increase the faucet? Can I make the faucet bigger? That's the best way to be able to make sure that you have the best chance of surviving. Because ultimately, again, we're a law firm is a business. So if your law firm cannot generate clients, then you don't have a business to be able to sustain. You won't have a business to be able to sustain what you're currently doing. Essentially, you're going to end up being, again, the public service kind of company. And it's just like, okay, you get burnt out and you're going to get over it. And then you realize you have to shut it down, all that stuff. So call of action, go focus on the business generation. Again, listen to people like Sasha, hire people like Sasha to be able to help you get to the next level and help you double your law firm. At least that's like the best way to future-proof it.
Yeah, absolutely. The other thing that I keep thinking about when I think about that, so I was in the financial services during the Great Recession of 2008 through 2012. I started a decade before that recession kicked off. And what my then partner and I found out that when the house of cards started collapsing, those who were well-positioned, at first they survived, but then as they saw their competition fall apart, your business started rapidly growing. We've seen colossal growth like we could have never imagined. It actually happened during the recession and at the tail end of it and right after it. It was a hockey stick kind of growth for one reason. The demand was still there. There would arguably still be demand for legal services 5 years from now. But the competition took such a beating that within 3 years, there were 50% fewer financial service companies in our sector than there were in 2006. Thus, there was so much more business to go around for those who survived. So if you position yourself well for business generation, as you refer to it, you're arguably going to be bigger and better and more profitable with more systems working fewer hours than you would today. But you have to, I like to refer to it as the check engine light. It's blinking, like flashing like this in your face and says, take action now before this engine seizes. And then it'll be too late.
I agree. And for me, like as you're sharing this, I think it comes down to being either reactive or proactive. Mm-hmm. So are you going to wait for the flashing light to eventually turn into, you know, your car making sounds where you're forced to take the car in for repair? Or was it better, you know, before even the flashing light to go get the checkup and make sure you do something about it? It's a proactive approach, you know. And by the time it happens, it's already too late. At that point, it'll be a matter of survival, and it's just not a fun game to play with. So better to play the proactive game.
I agree. Usually I would say an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of solution or fixing, but here it may be too late. Like with AI taking such inroads with search, like we're seeing as of last quarter, Q3 of 2025, 27% of new traffic comes to our law firm clients' websites through ChatGPT. And that number is rapidly increasing. So if you're not in the answers given by ChatGPT today, what are the chances it will happen a year from now? It's only going to get a lot more expensive to get there.
Absolutely. And just yesterday, ChatGPT released their ChatGPT Atlas browser, which is essentially a Chrome competitor. So imagine Chrome owned by Google. Obviously, the homepage is Google search. Well, now a lot of people are going to jumping on the ship of using ChatGPT's browser. And guess the homepage of that is ChatGPT, not Google. And yeah, a lot more people are going to be ChatGPTing. Even for me, Sasha, 2 years ago, I realized that, you know, I'm not searching on Google anymore. So I replaced the Google app on my phone on the most prime real estate area that I have, which is like on the bottom, which is like very easy to click. I replaced it with ChatGPT and Grok. And you don't see Google on my home screen besides this.
Well, I see that Chrome tab right there next to ChatGPT.
Yeah, but that's like a very backup. Like I barely even go there. But for the most part, like that's the first place I'm going to is, you know, tapping into ChatGPT's solution to help me figure out my answers.
By the way, a side note there, the way that ChatGPT features your law firm and your answers is foundational SEO, local SEO, and directories. So the strategy for getting featured in ChatGPT is very similar to getting featured in Google. So if you're doing exceptionally well in Google today, there is a high probability that you're going to do fairly well in ChatGPT. There's more emphasis on certain mechanics of how you do things for ChatGPT. That's quite a bit different than Google. But if you have those three things fundamentally covered and you do them very well, the leap from getting featured in chat in Google to getting featured in ChatGPT is much smaller than, hey, our SEO is terrible. We're not showing up anywhere, but let's work on GEO. Let's work on getting featured in ChatGPT. Not going to happen. Scrubbing the same internet for information as Google does. So it's very important. You may, as of the time of this recording, you may already be somewhat late to that game. Just a terrible thing to hear if you are in that position, but maybe there is still some time left. But I just came from a humongous marketing conference put up by HubSpot, which is a very large marketing automation company. I think it was attended by 20,000 people. The theme of it was, it is getting harder to be found across all platforms. So the time to act was like 10 years ago, 5 years ago, somewhat today. But if you're not taking those actions today, and I do not mean to be all doom and gloom, my business depends on having a lot of very successful law firms around. But it's the truth. Do not be a casualty of this technology war, because it will happen to a lot. So you gotta be very, very proactive. You gotta hear what Sam says. Sam, are you still running your podcast? I remember that you've done a lot of content in the past.
No, I stopped.
Too busy being successful?
No, just focus on my law firms. I personally like being more behind the scenes and just being kind of smart and strategic with everything I do. So I'm always reevaluating. I'm constantly pivoting, constantly changing, and it sometimes drives my team insane because I'm always constantly changing, but I'm doing the same thing to my own schedule and everything that I'm currently doing. So, you know, what I'm doing now, I won't be doing in 3 months for sure. Yeah.
I do remember 2.5 years ago, a little more than 2.5 years ago, when you were on this podcast, I remember that you said something that I found very interesting that most people cannot afford to do because they don't have the org chart, which was, I remember that when I have an idea, you said that, when I have an idea, I immediately take action by sending that idea to the right person on my team so that they can go ahead and implement it.
Yeah. And it comes down to a high level of urgency. Mm-hmm. And this is something, it's just been a common theme over and over across all my law firms and all of our team members. And it just feels like you either have it or you don't. I try to instill it in people. It feels like right now my take is you either got it or you don't. Like, I don't know what it is. Is it drive maybe, or is it something with like, maybe you have a different perspective of time? A lot of people, like, they see change happening that it takes planning, like weeks of planning, months of planning, not the right time. The mindset is either gets done today or tomorrow. There's no like later. You know, sometimes sure you need to schedule it out for next week. Fine. But if you're finding yourself that you're always scheduling things out to the future. Now is not the right time. When this happens, also conditional mm-hmm. doing.
When
I settle this big case, when this litigation period, you know, finishes, then I'll be able to. We got to realize that life becomes more chaotic over time. You know, it's if anything, it gets harder in the future. So. For me, I just happen to work quick. I'm a quick implementer. I don't overthink it. I think, but I also don't overthink. Mm-hmm. It's a very fine line. And I also don't sit on decisions. I'm not deciding. It's either yes or yes. A yes or no, you're yes, yes. There's no, oh, let's see what happens. You know, sometimes I'll park it to collect more information, to help me, you know, see which is the right thing. But whatever it is, it's going to be implemented pretty much mm-hmm. immediately. So high level urgency with everything you do.
It's a really good point. I think a lot of people have the fear of failure that prevents them from testing things. I hate that when people say, let's try it. I don't say let's try it. They say, let's test it. Always have an R&D budget for every department, which could be like 10% of the total department's budget, and say, like, we're going to test things for up to 10% of what we're spending on the department and see if it works. So when you look at marketing, you'll be testing things. When you look at sales/intake, you'll be testing things. Operations, HR, leadership, you'll be testing things. Some things will work out and some things will not. And you know what? Pardon my French, fuck it. That's what testing is for.
Yep.
It's okay.
Yeah. And a lot of times, you know, it doesn't have to be you to test, and it doesn't have to depend on you. Again, as you mentioned, Sasha, you know, I'm not the one always testing everything out or doing everything myself. A lot of times I'm just texting it, hey, you just check this out and let me know by tomorrow whether this is the right thing for us. You know, so delegate it out.
Yeah, 100%. Sam, thank you. You're brilliant, very successful. You're 37, 38?
Yeah, 37.
37, six law firms, three kids, spending $7.2 million on advertising per annum, signing up 1,000 to 1,200 cases per month. Unbelievable. Thank you for your success, because you're sharing that. I hope that it inspires a few people who listen or watch this, because take some action. You will not regret taking it. You'll regret not taking it.
The gist of, I think what I do is, life is short. You know, run, you know, you only have one life, and just do it the way that you see it. You know, don't be not based on what your parents told you, how the way that it should be. Like, just do it, you know, find your rhythm and find your path. And be smart. Be smarter than anyone else. And for me, when I say smart, that means don't do what everyone else is doing. Be well thought out, think through it, use a lot of AI to help you figure out what's the right best way. And then once you get clarity, just act on it. And just go for it. And another thing that you said is, like, don't have fear. Who cares? Just go for it and see where it takes you. Let me just give a call to action, Sasha. Because I have all these law firms, I'm always looking to bring on the best people to join my teams across everything you could possibly think about. So it doesn't matter if you're a lawyer who's kind of burnt out and you're looking to do something fun and challenging at the same time, or you're somebody virtual you work in a law firm some capacity, or if you want to be on the front edge of marketing or whatever that is, just find my contact information below. Let me know. And also, I have a company called My Legal Academy. We set up a lot of automations and ads for law firms. Feel free to check that out. And yeah, if you're just interested in just getting in contact with me, just find my contact information, email me, and I'll be happy to get on a call.
Perfect. And Sam, what's your email address?
sam@molailaw.com, which is my last name.com. So it's find my, yeah, just I think it'll be shared probably below. If not, find Perfect. Me. You'll find me.
Thank you. I love this. Thank you.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much, Sasha. That's the Law Entrepreneur for today. I'm Sam Molai. I appreciate you listening. Subscribe to the Law Entrepreneur for more legal content and practical growth plays.